This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, we have a guest who was on in 2021 with an incredibly popular and extraordinary show, because this is an incredible guest. I'm going to keep you guessing for just a couple of seconds as to who it may be. You're going to be amazed at what she has done and discovered. And like so many Dreamlands, this is really about you. It's about your life and what it really is, what it amounts to, what it means. And above all, what can you do with it? What can we do with it? We're about to talk to someone who has proof that we can see into the future. I mean proof, and we're going to get to that right at the beginning. But first, I want to introduce you to the beautiful and extraordinary Kim Chesney. Kim, how good to be have you back.
Thanks so much. It's great to be back, Whitley.
Well, good. I'm glad, because I'm always glad to have you. Her wonderful new book is The Illumination Code, and it is Get Illuminated with the Illumination Code. Yes, sir. That's what we're going to be talking about. And it's going to be a very interesting thing. Now, you know where I want to start, Kim? I want to start at the Hull Fair. First, tell us a little bit about it. And then, folks, you're going to hear one of the most remarkable stories you've ever heard in your life. What is the Hull Fair, and why would you have been there, and when were you there?
So I was there, I guess it's 30 years ago now, so you're all going to know how old I am. I was in college. And
you're doing very well.
Thank you. like 30-some years ago, I'm in college and living in England in a little town called Hull, and some friends and I decided just on a very regular night to take a trip down to see the gypsies. And as many of us have probably done, is just see a psychic or a tarot card reader to, you know, see what they're going to tell us about our life. But this woman had something extraordinary in store for me. And I had no idea at that time that it was going to really change my life so much and really set me on the path that brought me here with you today. So I started, you know, my book out with this story, because what happened that night was something that over time really gave me evidence of the deep dimension of life, and that there's so much more happening in this world than most of us realize. That evening, I went in, she invited me in. It was at the Hull Fair. This fair was one of the oldest traveling carnivals in history in Western culture. So it's been going on since, I want to say like the 1400s, and it started out as a traveling carnival, just like the ones you'd see in the movies with the old timey, all the rides and candy and fortune tellers and something wicked this way comes-y. And so I went in, and she told me that in 1994, I was going to be in a foreign courtroom. And though I didn't, you know, it was going to be stressful, but I was going to be doing something good. You know, she told me some other stuff too, but what really stuck out in my mind is that she gave me a date, which was 3 years in the future. At that time, it was 1991. And so my friends and I are like, wow, like that was really specific. And not usually the kind of stuff that comes through when you have a palm reading or whatever kind of psychic experience. And so I wrote it down. I recorded all my journal. I was like, geez, this is what she said. 3 years, 3 years in the future. So time passed, fast forward, I'm back in the States. And in 1993, I received, I'll never forget, opening up my mailbox and receiving a call for jury duty. And I was very young, 21, 22 years old at the time. So that was something I had not expected. And I instantly knew that that's what she was talking about. And I just had this instant feeling that it was all going to come to pass, and I was going to get selected for the jury, and that I was going to, all that was going to happen in 1994. And it played out exactly as she said it. I ended up sequestered on jury duty for 2 weeks in 1994 in a foreign courtroom, and doing something that was good, though it was stressful. I was doing my part. So it was something that really showed me that it was possible to see the future. I had no doubt in my mind after that, because it wasn't some really woo-woo sort of thing that I could fit into by coincidence. It was very real. And there was no way to deny that this woman had foreseen this. So then I asked myself, well, if she can do it, could I do it? Could you do it? Can we all do it? And really began this lifelong exploration of psychic ability and understanding how it works and why it works. And even getting some really cool synchronicities, finding out a few years ago that my own grandfather actually, my ancestors were from that little town in England, in Hull. My grandfather was the mayor who actually rang in that same fair 500 years ago. So you can't make this stuff up. I'm telling you.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah. So that's really what, you know, that's why I'm here today. That's why I'm doing this, because I just sort of went down this rabbit hole in life, really trying to explain how this could happen, and found out that it's actually, yeah, it's quite probable, knowing what we know about quantum physics and science today, that these kinds of things will happen and do happen.
Well, that's the fascinating part, is that we are beginning to understand through the medium of quantum physics why this would be real and why it would be true. Now, do you think it means that the future is entirely decided or not? I'm curious about that. Or is it that something like this makes it happen? In other words, if you've never gone into that fortune-telling booth, would this have not happened?
Oh, such a good question. I think that's our natural next step after this, right? Because, so we can see things in the future, but does that mean that everything's predestined? Or how, right, if I had never gone there, would it never have happened? So there's so many questions that start to bubble up around this concept of time travel, premonitions. How does time work? So the way I've really sort of processed this is really that we understand that there really is no such thing as time with quantum physics. It's just this sort of illusion of our point of consciousness that we're traveling through, like the river of time, and we're the boat that's traveling down through it in this particular sort of relative place in this space and time. But really, the river's already out there, right? Everything that's happened, you know, or is happening in the past and the future is sort of already happening in this eternal now. So we know that time itself is sort of an illusion, but that doesn't mean that everything is predestined. So what's so interesting about quantum physics is that they allow for this concept of the multiverse and this idea that every choice that we make and every path that we sort of go down is a different fractal or different sort of stream in this river of time. And we actually create these different realities based on our choices. So that, you know, maybe there was a reality where I didn't end up in 1994 going to that courtroom if I would have made a different choice or something would have happened. But all the probabilities aligned with her particular vision that day. And I ended up being in that place and time. So when you think of quantum physics, we think in terms of probabilities, and we collapse those waves of probability with our choices and the decisions that we make as we move through time.
That's the collapsing of the wave. Could you tell us what you mean exactly by that? Because I think that's the real heart of this. Oh, you know, why don't we do this instead? We're going to come back to the collapsed wave in a moment for the free side. We're going to look at some commercials first. We'll be right back. We're talking to Kim Chesney. Her new book, The Illumination Code. Her website is kimchesney.com, and it's full of opportunities to engage with Kim, which you should do. Before we go on and go back to the question, tell us a little bit about the site, because it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, so all of the work that I do around intuition is really geared towards helping you to experience your own intuition. And so I have so many different free ways for you to practice developing your intuition. I have free card decks where you can get a little message for the moment, start a conversation with that part of yourself that knows everything, and find out what type of intuitive you are. There's lots of stuff there to really start exploring your intuition and just digging in and really, really going into that deep dimension and personally experiencing the magic.
Well, that's great. Okay. Now let's get back to this question of the collapse of the wave function.
Yeah. So that's one of those things when it took me me a year to write this book because a lot of these concepts are, you know, sort of mind-blowing. And it really took me some time to wrap my brain around this concept of the collapse of the wave. But it really is fundamental in understanding that, you know, the world that we live in is really a world of duality, a world of manifestation. But there's really this sort of meta reality, this source reality that's beneath, behind, within this sort of bubble of reality, this three-dimensional space-time reality that we live in. And when we understand that there was a singularity sort of before the Big Bang, and then when the Big Bang happened, it creates somethingness, nothingness turned into somethingness. So now we have the zeros and the ones and the nothing and the something and the potentiality and the manifestation. So when we look at quantum physics, there's, you know, the intelligent observer experiment and this idea that when we actually observe something or put our intention on something, that we collapse these waves of probability, this sort of ground state of the universe, of the potentiality into manifested reality. So this is what we do when we think, when we create. This is part of our nature. And that's one of my points in this book that I wrote, is that quantum physics isn't something that is just out there somewhere in the universe that you need a PhD to figure it out and understand. It's happening inside us all the time. Our intuition's a quantum function. Our manifestation is a quantum function. And all of the things that we do when we have these extraordinary experiences with our intuition are actually quantum experiences. These supernatural experiences aren't unnatural. They're just more powerful than we ever realized.
And yeah, in fact, we are, in a sense, a quantum function. That's exactly what we are, because, you know, there's something I worked on years ago about the electric field, electromagnetic field that's around the body and around the head. You know, it's nothing mysterious. Whenever you have an EEG or an EKG, either one, a brain or heart scan, it's picking up that electromagnetic field. But when you go into a certain state, that field becomes indeterminate. It becomes a quantum indeterminacy. Therefore, it is you are literally everywhere and at the same time, and you're part of a much larger universe. And this is when people can see things in their third eye, I think. And we go into that state all the time without realizing it. And I think you can talk a little bit about that state. I mean, you don't directly address this in the book. I know that. But that state of being kind of inwardly open so that these things can happen.
Yeah, and that really is key, is that inner openness, because, you know, our intuition opens this sort of gateway to these extraordinary experiences that when we're busy or we're thinking too much or we're in highly emotional states, when the heart and the mind are really activated in terms of our sort of ego or our sort of directed consciousness, it creates a kind of static so that natural intuitive flow can't get through. So really getting into that relaxed state of attention and openness with our intuition is so key to listening to the way it moves us with our heart. It guides us with our mind. And so it comes to us in these different ways that is really a signature to being, I call them no mind portals, is what you really want to open up. You want to get into that place where you just get your mind out of the way so you can create this portal to connect with that quantum dimension, that quantum field that's within you, that connects all of us, that gives you access to information that's happening in places that you are not or in times that you are not. So when you have more open space, you have more opportunity to have these extraordinary experiences that prove the deep dimension and our relationship with it.
You mentioned awakening your quantum intelligence. I mean, from chapter one, actually. And tell us a little bit about how. There's lots of practical advice in the book. I want to awaken my quantum intelligence. How do I do that?
Yeah, and you know me, Whitley. I like to put activities in my books, and so there's a lot of interactive ways to go and practice right. these things, right? And do them throughout the book, because I feel like it's so important for people to personally experience these things. So to begin to awaken our quantum intelligence, you know, I create this sort of step-by-step process of really starting to experiencing these things personally in little ways through experiments, little workshops that you can do on your own. But it comes in terms of really some mindset shifts. And the first key really deals with this, I think, is the most important mindset shift if you want to awaken this quantum intelligence, which is really insightfulness, thinking from within, following that inner sort of genius that's connected to the deep dimension. Is recognizing that there's a part of you that knows everything. There's a part of you that has access to all information, past, present, future, anywhere, anytime, any place. Through this sort of inherent quantum field, we can access intuitively things from other times, other places, other dimensions even, right? So you know about that. So we can yeah, really right, go yeah. beyond the walls of reality here, of our physical reality, to experience these things with our intuition.
So we have to sort of, I don't know how to put it, kind of relax into it. In other words, to be open to this, you can't look directly at it. Am I right? Am I going in the right direction?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. And that gets back to sort of this intelligent observer effect, that when we look at something, we immediately change it. We sort of break that spell. And that's something I noticed early on with my experiences. You know, when I would, in my personal journey, I would have experiences at night and I would have visions and I would see things sort of in that half sleep, right? When I would wake up, I'd notice I could see things. And then the more I woke up and the more I tried to focus on it and see it, the harder it was for me to see it, it would start to disappear. As long as I was in that sort of, there's some studies around it with brain waves. Like if it's theta waves or the delta wave, there's a certain wavelength that you're more open to other things that are on that wavelength, I guess. And so being in that place where you have your mind out of the way, whether you're in super sort of a state of super consciousness, which is heightened awareness and the highest state of really awakened guidance, or whether you're in that sort of, like Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, whether you're in that sort of hypnotic trance state of relaxed attention. Either way, you know, we hear a lot of testimonials about people getting really powerful intuitive experiences. And I think the key, the common factor, is that this middle zone, the mind zone, is out of the way. The more you try to reach for something and focus on it and concentrate on it, the more you push it away. So we have to invite it into our life with a state of relaxed attention. Be aware of it, give it energy with our attention and honor it, but don't push for it too hard. Don't look too hard. If you concentrate too hard, it actually creates a barrier to experience.
That's very interesting. You know, the cards, you have cards on your website. That's a good way. I've been able to accomplish fascinating things with cards, precisely, I think, for this reason. If you heard a bump, folks, excuse me, I bumped my mic. For this reason, in that when you can get in that state, but not lose your place in what you're trying to do with cards. Can you tell us a little bit about more about your cards and what they mean?
Yeah, I really love my cards. They've actually become one of the most popular things that I offer, because they really open up an opportunity for you to sort of start a conversation with that part of yourself that knows everything in a really simple way. And it's sort of based in the tradition of sacred seeing, visio divina. In religious traditions in the old days, people would look at a piece of art or some sort of, creative sort of picture of some sort and allow it to speak to them. The voice of the divine was said to come through these pictures. And this concept's very similar when you work with these insight cards I developed. Each card is just a beautiful picture. There's no inherent system to it other than that it's designed to speak to your intuition. So when you look at one of these cards, and I have a free deck on my website, you can play with those while you're there too. You look at one of these and it'll just start to unwind a message for you. It's kind of magical how it happens. And sometimes there's signs and synchronicities that go with them. But it's really designed just to speak to you and your unique intuition and get into that space where you have your mind out of the way.
And that's the key.
Yep.
Right there. Getting the mind out of the way. And free listeners or, and viewers, we're going to get the break out of the way right now, too. We're talking to Kim Chesney, her website, kimchesney.com, her dynamic new book, The Illumination Code. When I say dynamic, it's actually works. And so many of these books, and I really don't have them on the show very often, because so many of them actually don't work. And I always test everything before, you know, does this work? Do these cards do anything? Am I getting anything and getting anywhere in this? And the answer is yes. And the reason is that, first, I mean, Kim has had personal experience and she's built from that personal experience something that makes sense. But the second reason is it works for me. Your ideas work for me. And so if you could say one thing to people, or maybe more than one, it's fine. That'd be perfectly fair. where do they start to make your ideas work for them?
Yeah. Well, the first place, depending on where you're at on the journey, I think the first place is to accept that you have this dimension within you. Because I think a part of so many of us are sort of conditioned out of it, or we are afraid of it, or don't know what to do with it. So I'm here, like I feel like I literally exist to be a mouthpiece for this, that your intuition is, it's not just real. I mean, science is telling you now it's real, so we don't have to worry about all the people that say it's bunk anymore because it's actually real. But also, it's not something to be afraid of. It is your extraordinary nature. It is what you're meant to embrace in your life to get to your highest, fullest, wholest self. So you're never safer than when you are following your intuition and living by your intuition and in that loving embrace of the universe that your intuition calls you to. So I want to encourage people to, I want to be really an example of that, that this is something that can really change your life for the better and open you up to new dimensions of experience and understanding of the spiritual world as well as the world that we live in. So really to accept that it's a part of you and that you have this and own it. And then to just cultivate that trust with yourself. Building trust in your intuition takes time because this is unknown territory, right? This is uncharted realms that we're going into with our intuition, and it can feel scary. But if you stay true to yourself and know that your intuition is going to guide you to that next step forward, even if it is a little unsettling or not what we expect, to go boldly and to trust ourselves and to trust in life, that's when the magic starts to happen. And that's when you really start to experience these extraordinary things that help you to recognize your higher nature and your potential.
That recognition is the key thing, because we don't recognize that part of ourselves. The society is constantly doing two things. One is it is directing us away from ourselves and toward the material world constantly. And two is it is giving us a continuous message that we are less, that we don't matter very much. And that we are here to follow, not to lead. But I think we are all here to lead ourselves, and that the material world doesn't matter very much. I mean, it better not, because I have very little in the way of money and so forth, so I can't exactly fly around in private jets. And so if it does matter, that's very disappointing. All right, now let's get into meta-reality. And I think that's the way to where to go from here. And talk about meta-reality a little bit.
Yeah.
It's so good and fun to talk to you. I really am enjoying it.
No, it's always great to talk to you. I think we've had so many different experiences, but they're all pointing in the same direction. So it's,
yeah, exactly. Right? It's very cool. Go ahead.
It's exciting. It's exciting when you see this, when more and more people are starting to come together and say, yeah, like this is real. We're in totally different places on the planet, but we've both experienced these things and recognize this force at work. So meta reality is really this idea that We have regular old reality that we live in every day, the material reality. And I couldn't agree with you more. We need to learn to follow ourselves and not the world. That's one of the messages of this book, is that we're tricked into thinking we have to follow other people and do what everybody else is doing out here in this regular old reality. But the real magic is when you start to follow yourself and whatever comes up from within you, those callings and passions and intuitive experiences, those are the things that define you and make you unique, because all of it really is just for you. This world is for you, and we are important, and our intuition shows us that. You know, here we are in this world with this guide built into us. We are important. We wouldn't have that sacred guide within us. It wouldn't matter if we weren't important, right? So we are important, and this journey is really linked to this deeper reality, the deep dimension that is within and around us, and manifested in this quantum field that connects all being, right? So if you peel back the layers of this sort of bubble of time and space that we live in, our little illusion of reality, when you go beyond that, there is a deeper reality that transcends time and space, that connects all of us, right? So no matter where we are on this planet, even in time and space, we have a connection. That's why things like telepathy and synchronicity happens, right? Because there's a part of us that knows everything, that's pinging the part of our people that we're entangled with, their part that knows everything. And we're sort of part of this worldwide web of interconnection. So the meta reality, the deeper reality, shows us the unity behind it all, the sort of eternal dimension, the timeless dimension, where we're all one and connected instead of separate and living in this material reality of separate things and objects.
Let me ask you this. You say we're important. And I always wonder why. I feel it's true. I feel that each individual is important. And I recently saw a story in The New Scientist about some brain imagery that had been done showing the actual complexity of the human brain being literally beyond conception. It is an absolutely vast instrument. And you have to wonder where it came from and who we are. And we're sitting here in these clothes and we don't have any hair and we've got cars and planes and all kinds of stuff. Could blow ourselves up at a moment's notice. We're really different from the other animals on this planet. So just, you know, well, we've come to the end of Free Dreamland. I am sorry to say we're going to change this to half an hour rather than 45 minutes from now on. And as long as I remember that, which will probably happen most of the time, because we really need you to subscribe to this to the site, and it's not happening. So go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe, and then you won't have to watch any commercials and or listen to any commercials, and you will get to listen to the whole show. So Free Dreamlanders, for now at least, thank you for staying with us this long, and thank you for Kim Chesney. Kim's book is The Illumination Code. Her website is kimchesney.com. It's loads of fun and very enlightening. We'll see you again next week. Okay, subscribers, now it's just you and me and Kim. And we're going to go on for a whole hour without a single break. And we're going to have a lot of fun. Why are we so important?
Yeah, that's the question that that I think about at night too, honestly. I think that there is something special about us and something particularly important about this conversation, even when we get into concepts like artificial intelligence and, you know, what is life and what differentiates from us from animals? What differentiates us from machines? And we can look at the human brain, which some even say is a quantum computer, right? You know, there's scientists out there that are saying that our brains are quantum computers, which, you know, that makes sense to me based on intuition being a quantum function. It would all really make sense. And a lot of pieces would fit together if that's the case. And so this idea of quantum computing and where that's leading and artificial intelligence and all of this stuff brings together this really sort of a fascinating conversation about human consciousness. And at the end of the day, despite all this, one thing that we do know is that, you know, we are beings that have self-awareness in a way that most other beings that we know don't have. And that's, you know, particularly speaking here on, in our reality at this place and time, right? So that makes us unique, that that we can become self-aware and reflect on our own existence. So, you know, this concept that we are sort of points of consciousness, of a greater consciousness, a wholeness, a God, spirit, what, you know, whatever word that you choose to use for that, it resonates with me that we are sort of participating in this duality of existence, that we are at once that sort of universal mind, that universal consciousness that is building the world, but we're also this beautiful creation that is able to reflect on it and see it and experience it in this sort of dance of the knower and the field together.
And it's a dance. It's a sort of dance. You know, there's so much in esoteric practice of dance. There's the twirling of this of the Sufi of the Mevlevi dervishes. There are the movements of the Rajiv Foundation, and there's loads of dance throughout Asia. There are all kinds of extraordinary dances that, and these dances reflect the dancing of the universe. And what is this energy? When you when you're not being directed, when you're not marching along the path, when you're letting kind of letting it happen, tell us about that energy.
Yeah, and that sort of resonance, those harmonics, all of the words we use to describe the flow of energy is, I think, part of the expansion of the universe, the expansion of consciousness. And there's a little section in my book where I sort of, it all just sort of came together, this little story of this theater of life where we're like string theory, right? We're talking about string theory in physics, and that's all about harmonics and vibration and all of these words we use for music and dance and resonance and energy. In my mind, they're part of a universe in motion, right? Before that, we had the stillness and the peace and the oneness and the everythingness. And then that we came into being and there was a big bang and there's motion and unfolding and a coming alive, which we experience as this joyful, hopefully, this joyful dance of life, which can also sometimes be scary. It can be painful, right? But it's all part of this part of growth process of expanding our consciousness and knowing more and becoming more along with the universe. So the universe is growing and manifesting. And I feel like it wants us to do that with them. So the idea when we have these intuitive nudges and prompts in our life or these callings and passions in our life, it's the universe's way of inviting us to participate in that expansion. That's why when we get in a rut or we aren't really feeling good about ourselves, we feel down. We don't feel like we're living our best life when we're not out there feeding our souls and nurturing our spirits.
Yeah, and the world we live in says, don't nurture your spirit. Don't do that. Stay with the new car. Stay with the latest movie or whatever. Get more stakes. Now, you know, we have danced, speaking of dancing, danced around something that I'm sure a lot of the listeners have thought about, which is the Akashic Records. Mm. And your concept of the field of intrinsic awareness relates to that. Can you address this connection?
Yeah, I really love talking about this because, you know, in my journey growing up, I was taught to use the Akashic Records. I invoked the Akashic Records on many occasions, and I could never really wrap my brain around how this would work. You know, coming up, learning about this idea, if you don't know what the Akashic Records are, it's this idea that there is a hall of records that stores all of the wisdom information of the universe, that holds all of our soul's journeys, that you can visit this beautiful library, this compendium of knowledge and books, that and pull out a book with a certain story you want to read and read it and intuitively bring through information about people and life. And it's this wonderful, I've had really wonderful experiences with it throughout my life. But I never could understand, like, that doesn't really rationally make sense. How could there be a library somewhere, right? So once you start to look at quantum physics, everything starts to make sense because 200 years ago, when in spiritualism popularized this idea of the Akashic Record, they didn't have computers. They had no idea about quantum physics. They only knew this physical reality. And they knew that in this physical reality, we stored information in books, right? So they didn't store them in hard drives. They didn't have an iCloud. It was books. So it turns out that
I was sitting there thinking to myself, there's a certain kind of inner movement, and I sort of did it, where you let go of something. And I know you know about this. And I closed my eyes and I kind of tried to just let go and just listen to the words coming in. And things changed immediately. I began to hear more than what you were saying. Mm. As I thought I would. And I it's very interesting because there's so much more going on. Like even in a conversation like this, there's so much more going on. And let's talk a little bit about meta-reality, because that's where I think I'm trying to go. That if we kind of let go of what we're holding on to, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. just let it go, and then it turns out there's a bigger reality there. Mm-hmm. Are you wearing a mala, a little mala on your arm?
Yeah.
Tell me about, well, let's, okay, we're going to go back to meta-reality in a minute. I'm really interested in malas and in that whole thing of the 108 beads on the mala and why they are there. We're going to have in June a lady on the show who is an expert on that whole area of thing. But tell, do you know about the significance of the number 108?
I know that there's 108 beads. Maybe you could tell me what you're...
Yeah, okay. There are 108 beads on the mala. And let me see if I've got this here. Okay, no, I don't. But that doesn't matter. I can still remember. The fascinating thing is that the 108, number 108, relates to the things like the distance between the earth and the moon, the diameter of the earth, the distance between the earth and the sun. In other words, it is a map of the structure of the solar system.
Wow, I did not know that.
What? And this, you folks, you understand, a mala, this is a prayer, set of prayer beads.
Yes.
In fact, I might even have one in my pocket. No, of course I don't, because I wasn't expecting to talk about this. Anyway, dating back literally into the dimness of prehistory, we knew more in the past than we do now. And, you know, the Akashic Records aren't, we talked about them, and I want to, before we go back to meta-reality, I want to go back to that, because what we didn't talk about is where they came from, how they were made. Is this something that is kind of left in super consciousness that we can access? Did someone leave it there, or is it just a natural function?
Yeah, I think that it's sort of, I think we created it. I think as part of this expansion of the universe, we've all created it. And it's sort of, look at it as the recording mechanism of the universe. And every thought we've ever had, every action we've ever taken, we record into this sort of cosmic memory field that stores all of the information of our reality, potentially other realities, multiverses. And it's sort of a co-creation that we can go back and participate in at any moment. And back to your idea of this meta reality and expanding our consciousness, expanding our awareness. This is key, because when we really get into that expansive space where we can go beyond this little bubble that we're in time and space, we can see more, we can feel more of that reality, and really see that we're participating in something that's so magical and so wondrous, and that there's life all around us. We just can't perceive it because we're sort of living in this veil of materialism.
Exactly. And the veil of, it's not a veil, it's a wall. I mean, it's getting thicker every day. And I mean, I know the veil of materialism is really thick when I realize the truth about my car. I can't understand it, and I will never be able to understand it. And it will start to do things and does do things that I can't predict or understand. And in other words, our world, the material world, is becoming so complicated that it's kind of leaving us behind. Mm-hmm. And now we have AI, which the material world actually isn't complicated enough. So it's going to want to complicate it more and leave us farther behind. Yes. But where we are in terms of this other world is way ahead. And we lost something. The mala, the 108 beads, the mala proved that we lost science of some sort. Yes. We lost a science of the soul is what we lost.
Yes, and also...
You're part of the revolution of regaining it.
I hope so. I mean, that's exactly what I feel called to do. And I've had a passion for this my whole life. And even, you know, to build on what you were saying, if you go to the Bhagavad Gita and you read the 13th chapter where Krishna was talking about, you know, explaining to Arjuna the what life was and how it works, he started talking about the knower and the field. That perfectly describes the quantum field. It's everywhere, but it's nowhere. It's within all of us, but it's connecting all of us. It's invisible. And you look back on this and you see 3,000 years ago, we had an awareness of this, but we did lose it. And whether it's through sort of this quest for intellectualism or materialism or us thinking that through our egos that we can figure everything else out with our sort of logical, rational thinking mind. And we sort of let this wisdom and interconnection sort of fall away. But we did know this. There's proof now that we knew all this. And this is just a relearning of things that we somehow knew a long time ago.
Exactly. And we're at a point in our history where we really have to do this. We have to recover the abilities we lost in the past, or we're going to be in real trouble here and very soon. Mm-hmm. Now, let's get back to meta-reality because it's so important in the book. The best way is to say, I'm encountering it for the first time. I'm not actually, obviously. I've read
yes,
books,
obviously.
We are the group. The listeners are. Mm-hmm. How do you explain it to somebody who's encountering it for the first time?
Well, you know, it can be difficult because I think for the first time we can all experience it in different ways. You know, my first encounters with meta-reality were very shocking. I didn't really understand that there was a meta-reality when I first saw meta-reality. So for me, I wasn't quite sure what was happening and questioned my sanity a little bit. It's sort of different for everyone. Some people sort of awaken to this dimension slowly over time as they learn and make breakthroughs. I think a part of that is really, you know, learning to trust and getting past our fears. And I think our fears and our resentments and things that we hold on to do hold us back from that reality. That sort of lower energy stuff prevents us from really getting into that magic of meta reality. But then once we really start to learn to trust in life and get into on the same frequency as life, and we can perceive these things, it can happen slowly and gradually, and feelings of expansiveness, joyfulness, really ability to perceive things that other people can't perceive, or it can happen very suddenly. In my case, it happened literally overnight. I had an out-of-body experience after having a great day. I have to say, for me, I realized when I started having these experiences, it was because I have a great day and I would just be so uplifted. I somehow was connected to those higher things and just, it happened. So I was in this elated experience and I woke up the next day feeling so joyful and so at one with life. And then I started to be able to see things that weren't there, that no one else could see. And for me, that was very confusing. But in retrospect, I understand that I just expanded my consciousness. What happened was I was able to perceive more of reality. So one of the things we know is that, you know, reality is like, you take, say, reality is this wide. That's all of reality. We perceive like this tiny little bit with our senses. There's so much more out there in meta-reality. And when we activate our intuition and wake up to this deeper dimension within ourselves, we start to perceive just a little bit more of it, a little bit more of it with time.
Well, yeah, a few moments ago when I just went, I tried to just open myself, the whole interview changed. Mm. And we went in totally new directions because I was trying to do what you suggest.
Yes.
I mean, literally. And it works beautifully. It really does. To just, it's a release of something that's kind of holding you,
yes,
into the structure of material reality.
Yep.
You release it and all of a sudden you're in another reality and it's much bigger.
Yeah, because when our mind, we're focused and we're like thinking and we're so controlled and it narrows our vision.
And I think, absolutely.
Right? It narrows.
It sure does. It surely does. Okay. Now, that gets me to the virtual nature of reality in the Mind Matrix chapter. How does that relate to physics, current theories of physics?
Yeah, so this is, these are ideas. It's theoretical in nature, this idea of a holographic universe, which is really one of the dominant theories in physics right now of understanding our reality, is that, we realize that, we aren't, this is actually a discovery that most people aren't aware of because it hasn't really become mainstream teaching yet in schools, but that, we realize we aren't made of matter. We're not even just made of energy. We know E equals MC squared. We know that Einstein, showed us that we're just different states. But if you really get down to the fundamental building blocks of the universe, it's not matter. It's not just energy. It's actually information. So we've realized that the world is built on information, right? And information is carried on light. And we know that there's this beautiful idea that we're living in it like a simulation, whether or not this is a simulation, we can't, it's not like we're living in a video game, but there's an element to that we're living in a world that's built of information and light, and that is very much accessible and read by our intuition.
And to let it, the interesting thing is to let the intuition happen that's hard. And but I want to go back to something. I don't want to. We'll get to that. That we skated around a little bit a few minutes ago, and that is, I want to go way back to that fortune teller.
Mm.
And did you ever find out anything about who she was or anything?
That's so funny. I was actually Googling her because I was going to get her to come to my book launch party and come and just say something and special guest. But she was the granddaughter of Gypsy Rosalie. And there's been a lot of those. So I just, I think I found a picture of her. She was a really young woman at the time. She was a beautiful young woman. And I just remember thinking like, wow, like she was really cool and smart and not like the old thing you would expect of some scary gypsy or something. And she was just seemed like a great person. So yeah, I tried to find her, but then I never was able to find her, but I'm pretty sure she's still out there. She was pretty young at the time.
I have a friend who was walking down a street in New York and decided on a whim to walk into one of those sort of basement apartment fortune tellers. And, he just walked in at random. His friends were all laughing at him, but he said, I'm going to just do it.
Yeah, have fun.
And he did it. And he proceeded to come face to face with the unknown. Mm. And this very nice woman there proceeded to tell him all kinds of things about his life, his family, their names, every detail of his life that she could not have known because he just walked in randomly off the street. What is this?
Yeah.
You had it happen to you. He had it happen to him. I've had it happen. I think most of us have had some version of it, not as spectacular as you and as my friend, but a little bit of it, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that this is just a demonstration of our ability to tap into that quantum field, that Akashic record that is just stored within us. And whether and it can be the future or the past, it doesn't matter. All of that information is out there and accessible. Some people, I think, are just born with a gift that they're, you know, more naturally open to it. Just like some people were born with a gift of being an artist or a mathematician. They're just attuned to it. So the rest of us have to work a little harder. I think any of us could actually do that. In an intuition lab, we do practices like that. And we might just bring down little bits and bytes of information. Like I might just be able to tell you a letter that's involved with your name or maybe a place where you live, where other people might have really open connections and just pull down lots of this stuff. And I really feel like that's what the gypsy did when she was supposedly reading my palms. She was a palm reader, but I held my palms out and she looked me in the face and she might have glanced at my palms once or twice, but she wasn't reading my palms. She was pouring down information from downloading it, I think, from that cloud of information that's everywhere around us that we're all plugged into with our sort of own access point.
The Acacia Cricket.
Yeah.
Which is not just from the distant past. That's the thing about, it becomes clear in this book that it's about more than that. It's about, it's a hyper-dimensional vision of reality is what it is.
I love that.
And when I say hyper-dimensional, I mean it's outside of the normal dimensions, but it includes everything. Does this mean that the future is all preordained or not?
No, it means that we have the ability to sort of go beyond the dimension that we're trapped in this three-dimensional reality and create our future. We can create any future. I think this is where it gets really interesting. If you think about quantum conscious and alternate realities and all the different versions of Whitley that might be out there somewhere, have all the different choices that you made. Right. So, it's fascinating. There's some pretty good movies being made out about those sort of parallel time tracks and alternate lives and our doppelgangers and things like that. It's great. It's great food for thought. We don't know for sure, but that's what physics is pointing towards, that that's actually the dominant theory right now.
It's fascinating. And there's a big move in science to look into the brain and to try to find the source of consciousness at a level of brain function that is indeterminate. Now, what they're, of course, trying to do always is to show that consciousness is only inside the brain. Mm-hmm. But the fascinating thing about this particular effort is, if they prove it's true, then they have always also proved that that has to be wrong. Because quantum indeterminacy doesn't end with your head. If it's quantum indeterminacy, it's indeterminate.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I know how that study is going to turn out. Because I know our brain isn't in our head. I've been conscious and not in my brain at the same time. Yeah. So
our friends, the visitors, take me out of my body every once in a while. I never can get out myself because I don't think they trust me. I think they think I'll play pranks on people. And I wouldn't do that ever in a million years. I would not be a particularly bizarre ghost or anything. but in any case, that's not what we are. We're not simply the physical world. And one of the things about your book that did it for me, and I recreated it a few minutes ago, that I didn't take it as an exercise, and I don't think it's one of the exercises in the book, but after reading it, I found that I could just kind of let go. But there's lots of exercises, as I recall, in the book. That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. There's tons of them. And I think you hit the nail on the head with letting go. Like, that's really key. Cause I think to get into that place where you can experience these things, we have to let go of a sort of this intense grip we have on this reality and on of our mental focus.
How do you define metacognition? Because I think that that's what we're talking about right now without okay, just let's hear about metacognition.
Yeah.
Then we're going to go down another path entirely.
Yeah, I just think that it's, I'm trying to sort of create a new language to talk about this so that we get away from sort of the stigmatized words that we people often associate with intuition, because I think that intuition really is our ability to have this sort of experience of metacognition, which means we're able to have a cognitive function that is beyond everyday reality, where we can see things beyond this bubble of space and time that we're living in. So there's a whole world of metacognition out there just waiting to be discovered. So many people like you, people like me, people all throughout history have witnessed this and have used this function. But now it's time to start exploring it. Let's go to this inner frontier together and see what's there and work together instead of brushing it under the carpet and pretending like it's a secret.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're told it's a secret in a world which needs us to help the continuous expansion of the materiality. Yep. At a time when we're coming up against the limits of the planet's ability to support this kind of expansion, and yet it keeps saying, you know, every company wants to turn in results that they grew in the last quarter. And that's going to keep on going until, you know, we eat all the leaves on the tree.
Yep. And I think what you just said is so important. And this is one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this work, is because I feel like if we don't rebalance, if we don't start listening to that, this voice within us, if we don't stop just this quest for more and more power, more money, more stuff, more things, and redirect that energy inwards, we are at a crisis point. And I feel that intuition has such a huge role to play in that, a role that allows us to have empathy for each other, to see beyond our separateness, to bring us together, to know the future, to have foresight, to have the ability to learn from things in the past. So this is a really crucial time. And I think it's no, you know, coincidence that intuition is something that's starting to come to the forefront finally, after it's been marginalized for so long, because it is our power. They don't want us to believe in it. They don't want us to trust it because it's powerful.
That's right. They don't want us to touch it because we escape. It's an escape route.
It is.
Now, speaking of escape routes, entanglement, quantum entanglement plays a huge role in the book. And we're going to be speaking of labs. I confess, reads the lab chapters because it's full of labs and it's full of ways of doing things. And like your website is, it's a website that shows practical ways of turning yourself into a quantum indeterminacy.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, it's so cool in that. And the book's the same way. Now, you've got stuff about soulmates and telepathy and all kinds of stuff like that. Mind over matter, and this entanglement is at the core of all of this. So let's first start by what you describe as entanglement, and then go into some of exactly what you mean by a soulmate and stuff. But yeah. Let's start with entanglement.
Okay, so yeah, and this is really one of, I think, the really exciting personal applications of quantum physics, because one of the really popular concepts in physics now is this idea of entanglement, that if there's two particles that were joined, you separate them, you can put them on opposite ends of the planet, and they remain entangled. You spin one, and the other one spins right along with it, even though they're nowhere near each other, they're still somehow in communication. So these kinds of experiments have opened up all kinds of research and exploration in terms of consciousness. And it turns out that we are entangled. Human beings are entangled. And this is a lot of how your intuition works. You're entangled with people through your thoughts, through your feelings, through your locality, if you live near them. And it explains things like, for example, there's a great little story of entanglement that wrapped up my whole fair story in the very beginning of the book. So after I found out that my grandfather was actually the mayor of Hall all those years ago, yet another type of entanglement, right? My ancestors were there and I somehow ended up going back to that strange place that, I mean, most people don't even know that town exists, right? And I ended up living there. But this beautiful moment of entanglement was as I was finishing up the story and writing it for getting ready for the last edit of the book, I had gone to that fair with two friends that had lived in Hull. They were English friends of mine that I hadn't seen in 30 years. I hadn't seen since the day I left England 30 years ago. And didn't he look me up, one of my friends, and send me a note on Instagram at that same time that I was working on that last bit, writing about our experience there. So this is a great example of someone I was still entangled with him, even though 30 years had passed. A part of him knew that I was writing about him and pinged him, and he looked me up at the same time. So it's all of these wonderful little moments of telepathy and synchronicity and really show us who we're entangled with. And if there's people that you have deep heartfelt connections with, this entanglement can go beyond space and time, can continue beyond life, beyond death. It unites us no matter where we are, no matter when we are. So it's those emotions and those feelings that we have for other people that are dear to us, keep us connected with them.
You know, something happened when we were trying to set this show up. Remember, we had all kinds of weird things that would come and intervene. And it was like the show, that this had to be on a certain day. I mean, we had to do this recording on a certain day and not before. It was very strange because usually this all works kind of like clockwork, but this time, no. And I was wondering if there isn't a hidden web somewhere in the universe that we are all kind of moving along, and that this web itself may be the web of consciousness. And it knew for that whatever reason that we shouldn't do this until this certain time.
I love that. I 100% agree with that. I think that we're just sort of going back to the sort of dancing analogy. We're still just players on a stage, but there's a greater director that knows everything that's going on. And right. Whether we can call that the part of us that knows everything, we can call it consciousness or the meta reality. But we are participating in things that we're not fully aware of. Our intuition was probably aware of it. You know, on some level, we probably knew that this needed to happen in a certain way or manifest in a certain way. That's why it's so important just to relax and flow with life and live with trust when things like this happen and know that everything happens for a reason.
Okay, I'm going to do this again. I did this a little while ago and just totally open my mind. Wait for a question. Why are we here?
And I'll tell you the first thing.
Oh, God. Why are we here? What? I'm sorry I put you on the spot like that, but that's what came up.
No, that's good, because I love this. This is a great way to use our intuition. That was the first question. The first thing that came into my mind, the answer was to grow. And then what I'm feeling with that is that, you know, whatever we are, right, whatever we truly are, and I think we can't fully comprehend what we are with our brains that we have. I think we're so much more. But I think that whatever we really are and while we're here, we are in a process of metamorphosis. And I think you talk about this actually in one of your books about how we're growing into something else and into something where our understanding of death changes, right? And that sort of experience, yes, of the beyond changes and shifts. And I think it is this sort of metamorphosis of turning into this butterfly somehow that this life is forging for us.
That's, of course, one of the themes of my work is the caterpillar and the butterfly.
Yep.
That the human being has different forms. And it's obvious from looking around us at the planet, we're definitely the caterpillar form. And are we headed toward the butterfly form? And is that why the visitors are here? What they are doing is sort of stage managing our transformation.
I love that. And that's the question, right? Are they stage managing this transformation and giving us this opportunity to become something more than we are and to sort of become this whole sort of different type of being that we can't imagine? Or are we going to choose to destroy ourselves and not make it to that, right? So hopefully, yeah, right, we are going to embrace the right path and choose life and choose to keep growing and keep changing and becoming.
You know, this is a fascinating interview, folks. You're not in it like I am and Kim is, but I'm using her techniques to build the interview. And it's working wonderfully. I haven't often felt so connected to someone I'm interviewing as I do right now. It's quite wonderful. All right. Let's go back to, I'm looking at my notes here. I always make a lot of notes when I read a book, but for obvious reasons. I'm going to interview people. I'm not going to just read the book and then think, well, wait a minute, what was that? Now, soulmates, we sort of touched on that. Well, let's talk about that a little more. Mm-hmm. What are soulmates?
I think that they are people that we have traveled through this life or other lives with, people that mm-hmm. are our complement to us, that help us to really manifest and become that butterfly, and are really sort of travelers with us on our journey and dedicated to supporting each other and our soul's growth.
I think that's right. And I think that happens. I think my wife was such a soulmate. Mm-hmm. I mean, Anne was really, she was very much more than seemed to be on the surface, and really altered my life. And then when the communion experience came along, she took over completely, like she was made for it. Mm. And she really did bring it all this definition and everything. And, you know, we met on a sort of a dating service. And, you know, you open yourself to, you kind of open yourself to the world, and all kinds of things happen when you stop trying to live a plan.
Yes. Yes. And I love your story with Anne. And I think that's one of the things that really touches me with your work, is the relationships that you two continue to have, even beyond the boundaries of this reality in this life, right? That shows you how powerful entanglement is.
That's right. And the thing is, we all have this. We just need to realize it.
Yeah.
And the way you do it is you let go. Mm-hmm. How do you let go? Tell us. You've alluded to this a number of times, but yes. let's define it a little bit more clearly. And of course, how do you define letting go? I mean, you're letting go, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pardon me, folks, if you hear a cataract of sound, I'm flying my arms around, and this old mic here is big, as you know. So, okay,
well,
letting go.
Well, I mean, that's the thing I think is, I struggle with that sometimes too. We all have to constantly remind ourselves, because it's like this life sucks us into this sort of hamster wheel where we are constantly having to do things, perform, achieve, think, feel, however people want us to do. So I think it's a constant practice that we have to remind ourselves of. You know, for me, the mala. The mala has really been a great tool for me in letting go, right? Because, you know, and I knew that you say something 108 times and it's supposed to have a magical power, but now I know why, because it's this sacred number. But really starting to retrain your brain, I think, to not care about those external things as much, to not care about what other people think or what you think you need to achieve, or comparing yourself to other people. All those traps that we get stuck in with the ego, they actually inhibit us from really going deep into that dimension. Like I said, the times when I had those best experiences in my life, I was forgiving people. I was just like, I'm not going to let this bother me anymore. I'm all of that stuff holds us down. And actually, when they say it hurts us more, I think I understand what that means. And very literally, in terms of our spiritual growth and our ability to commune with that deep dimension. So really just living in the moment, I remind myself that this moment is what matters, and this, the love of the present moment and the people around you, and appreciation of the smallest things, of air, of having beautiful trees around me, of the magic of living on this planet, right? We get to sensitize to it, but it's a wonder to be able to walk around this beautiful, amazing planet. Like, what a gift, right? So trying to look at those little things with renewed sense of wonder and magic has been really transformational, you know, in my own sort of sense of connection with life.
You know, I I live in a very tacky little condo with no views of any kind, but I live in a place where I can walk out and in 10 minutes be overlooking the Santa Monica Bay on this beautiful bluff with wonderful trees and everything. And I can sit there and I can close my eyes and I can look into another world. I've been able to do this since I started doing it on the Lakota Sioux Reservation in 2019, I think, in the Pine Ridge Reservation. I wrote about it in my book, A New World, and I still do it all the time. And that's available. That's just one of the things that's available to anyone. And it's not that you go and you try to do it and you can't. It's that you're not letting go in the right way. We've talked about synchronicity. We touched on soulmates. The chapter that's called Impossible Things has got a lot of impossible stuff in it. One of them is telepathy. And you touch on it. I'm not remembering the exact details, but I remember the section struck me. And because I have instances of this, and I think everybody does. And what more do you know about it? Why would you discuss it at all?
Yeah, I mean, I have also had very extraordinary experiences with telepathy. I've had knowings of things that you shouldn't be able to know. And it doesn't mean that it's any grand vision of the future of the earth. It might be a simple thing. Like, I know my friend's going to call me on the phone. And then like a minute later, they call on the phone. How do I know that? Right? How was that possible? Or, right, you know, just little things that prove that, again, that there's something deeper going on here. So I think especially telepathy is enhanced by entanglement. So if there's someone you're deeply connected with, you could be very, very much separated by time, by space. But if you have that emotional connection, it allows you to have those experiences more. So telepathy is something that I think, that, you know, there's really some experiments going on now that really show that through entanglement, it's very likely that we're going to be able to prove this at some point. This is actually going to be measurable because it's such a simple thing. It's so easy to notice and measure. So there's some fun little experiments in the book that you can play with, like remote viewing, remote previewing, sort of connecting with different people beyond time and space. And so it's a lot of fun. And that's one of the things I found in Intuition Lab is it's fun to play with your intuition because you get these really cool validations and you can have these wonderful experiences like the one that you just described. And when you had that sort of alternate reality experience in Lakota, I was actually in Illumination Code. I tell Whitley's story in that section of the book because it really touched me as something that was so extraordinary. Right. And
yeah, that we talked about that in the last time in 2021 when we were together.
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, that was before I had video.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
Yeah, it was, and it seems strange that. You know, it's been, you know, it's just a few years ago, but everything has changed and it's always changing and growing. And we're reaching some kind of a singularity. I think that's true. AI is part of it. And the changes in the environment and our realization that we're coming to a new beginning and an ending all at the same time. Now let's talk about the Inner Light Sanctuary, because that's a place we need to know a lot about at a time of change like this.
Yeah. And that is something that I think is so powerful for, we can all invoke that within us. It's that place of interconnection, of divine communion, of oneness, where I really use the Inner Light Sanctuary for me during meditation, during simple contemplation, even just like what you're talking about, just going out in nature and sitting and being and feeling that light and bathing ourselves in that light of wisdom, because we know that light holds all of the wisdom of the universe. That light is truth. That light is our connection to all that is, and really love. I think that's one thing that we miss a lot of times. But when we look at our intuition and where it's leading us, ultimately, it's leading us into the light. It's leading us, its end destination is love, love for ourselves, love for each other, love for life. And, you know, that's where it's taking us. So when we follow and we go into this inner sanctuary, it shows us how to love ourselves and even get that inner critic out of the way and really connect with the truth of our being and the wholeness of our being. And it's much easier to love ourselves and each other when we open up to that dimension of ourselves.
The inner critic and the inner naysayer too.
Yes.
That's important because there's a naysayer in there, a big time naysayer because of the world we've grown up in, the soul blind world, telling us it's nothing, nothing to see here. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you're in the right state, there's very little you can't see here. You can see almost everything. Now, this gets me to consciousness and being in coherence with mm-hmm. the universe. I thought mm-hmm. that was a very important idea. Why don't you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. And so, these seven keys, they sort of are, they build up to this final key, this last key, which deals with coherence. And in my mind, I like to save the best for last in my books. My agent's always like, you have to put all the good stuff in the first three chapters because nobody reads after the first three chapters. Well,
that's why we've got about 10 minutes left. And that's why we're talking about this now.
That's
I agree with you completely.
Save the best for last. So if you make it through that last chapter talking about coherence, which is such a beautiful word. It's a scientific word for harmony, for connection, for oneness, which we as humans experience as love. So when we're in a coherent state with another person, it feels like love. When we're in a coherent state with life, it feels like happiness. When we're in a coherent state with the world, with the universe, it feels like spiritual growth and divine communion and the expansion of consciousness. So striving for coherence is, instead of striving for money and cars and fame and fortune, striving for coherence is the real secret, because that's what allows our souls to come alive and to blossom and grow. And I love what the word, I had to jot that down, a soul blind world, because I really feel like that's what we're living in. And we're yes. constantly fighting against that.
And we weren't always soul blind, and we weren't always, we come from some kind of a world. You know, the one we've been talking about malas and making various references to Hindu mythology. And if you look at the stories of the gods, of the Hindu gods, there's stories of warfare. Mm. And there's a lot of warfare in our distant past. Do you suppose there was a great war here, and we are the kind of, let's see, who was it? Barbara Hand Clow, who talked about catastrophobia, that we're in a kind of state we're in a state of amnesia about a past that where things really, really went wrong. And this transformative energy that is so apparent in your book and on your website and in you I'm really getting a lot of energy from this interview. I'm going to be flying all day because of the energy. I mean, it's just a lot of energy. Now, can we go deep enough inside ourselves to find our way out of this trap that we are in, that where we no longer understand things like why the mala is 108 beads. Mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And that is the deepest question here. This, it really is. And can we do it? And the one thing I really believe about this, this is just the beginning, what we know, what you and I are doing out there, and what, you know, people who are working with consciousness right now, we're just at the beginning. There is so much more to discover or rediscover. It's just a matter of making that shift to be able to go boldly into those spaces, because I do believe, I think that we are repressing memories of past iterations of humanity. You look at the story that's been told again and again throughout history. There's been war. There's been people who go astray and get their civilizations are destroyed, whether it's the Mahabharata or you know, stories in the Bible. I mean, it goes on. Atlantis, right? So there's so many stories of these civilizations that didn't make it. You know, maybe it's really important now that we make the right choice this time, and that we don't end up in a state of calamity, and that we choose to go deeper into ourselves. And that's what we're just going to have to do that. I and have more and more people talking about it and raising awareness of it to support each other through it.
Your website has a lot of classes and things on it. I'm terrible at classes. I don't have any classes on my website because I don't do them well. Or at least I think I don't. Maybe all my friends say you should have classes because you do them very well.
So inner critic.
But you do classes really well, I think. I just suspect it strongly. So tell us a little bit about your classes.
Yeah, I think I'm bored to teach. I really love it. I've always wanted to be a teacher. So having this opportunity now of the internet has really been wonderful for me and allowed me to really work with people all around the world. So it's really been a dream come true. One of my favorite things to do is help people to discover the magic of their intuition. And as I do that, I get constant validations of all of this magic myself. So it's a great thing to teach because it's always different and new, and everybody's really sort of participating in this discovery together. So yeah, I offer courses all around the world, quarterly courses. You can work with me or you can work on your own. But developing your intuition live with other people, as you can see from this conversation we're having today, energy makes a difference. So really being in the presence, it doesn't have to be physical presence, but the presence of other people working with intuition really amplifies the energy and really like sort of sets the stage for lots of magic.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So the book's full of practical stuff. The website is too. Practical ways of escaping a too practical world.
I love that. That'd be a great book title.
That is actually. Well, it's not. I'll never write a book like that. So if you want it, you got it. Now there are guiding forces. Mm. I feel like this interview has got. There's a guiding force actually present here, and that. Tell us a little bit about your experience of guiding forces. Like, for example, it all started with the Hull Fair. Mm. And you were guided. Why did you go into the ladies' booth at all?
Right. Yeah. That and so you wonder what inspired me to do that. Life. Was I just led to that place in time serendipitously? And I said, hey, let's go here. Because I didn't have it planned out. I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go and go see this fortune teller and do this. No, it was sort of that universal direction. So we have guiding forces outside us, right? Things happen, things align to kind of put us in the right place at the right time, whether it's our sort of part of us that knows everything, orchestrating things from behind the scenes, or just our intuition leading us to the right place in the right time. So I do feel like I was guided there. Intuitively and sort of externally as well. And you know, the same goes for all of the decisions that we make in life. We're supported by all kinds of guiding forces in our life, whether it's our inner wisdom nudging us, or whether it's our loved ones that are in another dimension, angels. I mean, there's interdimensional life. We know that in many different ways. So, so part of this journey is exploring them and really getting to live in tandem and harmony with those guiding forces.
Under books I guess you end up on the Intuition Lab. I clicked through to it from your site. Mm-hmm. That I'm still on your site though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're both connected. They kind of go back and forth, the school.
Yeah. Okay. But that's what I was. I just didn't want to, I thought to myself, have I gone to another site and we proceed to talk about something she isn't doing?
No, that's the school.
There's an intuition awakening guide, which is free.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to get. I mean, I would get it anyway, but I didn't see it until this moment. And also, we did an show about the book Radical Intuition a couple of years ago in 2021, which seems like, doesn't it seem like a thousand years?
Yeah. It feels like forever ago. World. Life speeds up.
Tell us a little bit before we conclude about Radical Intuition.
Yeah. I love that book. And I was that book really gave me the opportunity to meet you. So it's sort of where our paths crossed in terms of guiding forces. And it's dear to my heart because, you know, I really set out to write that book as my real first book to demystify intuition and really help people understand how it works through so many different ways through our life, through our body, our mind, heart, and spirit. We're guided intuitively, holistically in everything we do. So that was really sort of, it's a great book to work on awakening, attuning your intuition, really just feeling all the different ways that you can experience your intuition in your life. And then Radical Intuition, then the Illumination Code sort of builds on that and sort of deepens it and talks about how it all works and how to get more of it.
Well, Kim, I have to tell you, I have experienced such a good energy in this interview. It really feels like the right thing. And I've enjoyed it enormously. And folks, I hope you enjoyed it too, because there's a special work going on here that Kim brings an energy to her work and an enthusiasm that helps make it happen in every life she touches. So, Kim, thank you so much for being with us. It was really a pleasure.
Aww, it's always a pleasure talking with you, Whitley. Thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, thank you.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.